you ever wondered how a book becomes a movie?
Or how a movie becomes a musical?
Or how anything is adapted at all?
Join us as we talk about your favorite stories and all the changes that were made along the way.
But more importantly, why? This is Willing to Adapt. Hi, welcome back to Willing to Adapt. This is Eric Von Crumley.
And this is Rummy Reyes.
How are we doing?
I'm doing good.
Today we are focusing on a classic and a classic remake. I don't know, I thought that. A lot of you folks out there get really excited about icons such as Audrey Hepburn, and I am no less. So today we will be discussing the classic 1950s Sabrina. And in the next episode, we'll be talking about the remake from 1995, also called Sabrina.
The Teenage Witch?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Although anytime I typed in anything looking up the movie, it automatically wanted to show me Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
I may have watched the wrong thing then.
Yeah. Well, then this will be a very interesting podcast.
Just kidding.
Yeah, I figured. All right. So, Romy.
Yes.
When was the first time you watched the original 1950s Sabrina?
I think this was the first time.
Was it really?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't remember seeing any of those scenes in my past.
Wow.
Maybe I might have, my mom might have had it on in the background and I may have watched it, but I don't remember it.
Sounds good. So today we're talking about the 1954 romantic comedy Sabrina that stars Audrey Hepburn, Humphrey Bogart, and William Holden. Yes, it's by Billy Wilder. And the biggest film he did before this was Sunset Boulevard. Did you know that?
I did, but I was thinking Stalag 13.
I haven't seen that one. 17?
I love that movie.
I haven't seen that one.
It's funny.
Is it? Got it. Sunset Boulevard is not.
No, it isn't. I've never seen the movie, but, you know, we've talked about the music.
That's one that we can talk about another time, because that's an adaptation.
Yes, it is.
All right, well, Romy, I wanted to just give a brief understanding of the play that Sabrina is based off of. The play is called Sabrina Fair. It is a romantic comedy as well. It was written by Samuel A. Taylor, and it ran on Broadway for a total of 318 performances at the National Theater on November 11th, 1953. It opened, I guess. And it did very well. It was very popular, and I think it was bought up immediately by Hollywood. Critics really liked it. They thought the it was comedic and the writing was great. It said it was more than a Cinderella story. There are quite a few differences between the play and the original movie. And so, you know what I'm thinking? I'll talk about the play a little later.
Okay.
Because I think it'll be best to talk about the film first and then
okay.
I'll backtrack.
Okay.
All right. So, if this was your first time watching the film.
Yes.
What did you think?
I really liked it. I enjoyed it.
Okay. Yeah?
Yeah.
You like Audrey Hepburn movies or Humphrey Bogart movies?
Both, even though I probably would say Humphrey Bogart tends to be a little bit more...
More up your alley?
Yeah, I've learned to appreciate Audrey Hepburn, especially because of my wife. That's one of her favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I had to watch... we watched a couple of them when we first were dating.
Roman Holiday?
Maybe, I don't remember.
Roman Holiday was her first film, and this was her second.
No, I don't think it was Roman Holiday. It was one where there was like a spy... Or they're caught up in, like, some sort of spy...
Charade?
Yes, that's it.
Oh, that's okay.
I thought you were saying the name of the game. I'm like, no, not right now. We're recording a podcast.
Stop.
But yeah, that was, I think, one of the first ones I remember watching. And I've seen bits and pieces of Roman Holiday.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a while. That one I remember as a kid. But this one, for some reason, I don't remember my... Because as those our listeners probably have guessed, most of my older black and white movie stuff comes from whatever my mom watched.
Mm-hmm.
And well, this one, I don't think.
Well, I was exposed to both of these movies, the original and the remake, because of my grandmother, because
okay.
She loves both of them. And I guess that I have one of my cousins is named after Sabrina.
Oh, really?
That's yeah.
That's funny. That's cool.
So I didn't know that until recently.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the movie did amazingly well when it first came out,
mm-hmm.
but the making of it was quite interesting.
I read a little bit. We watched a documentary and read a little bit about that, yeah.
So it was funny because Samuel Taylor wrote the play,
mm-hmm.
and he came on board to help write the screenplay. But then Billy Wilder started changing a lot from the play.
Mm.
And mainly for that reason, Samuel Taylor ended up leaving. He quit because That's so right. much was changing.
I heard about that.
And so they ended up getting another screenwriter to come on board.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Samuel Taylor still gets some screen credit for it.
Of course.
But it was funny because one of the stories is that the new writer who came on board, they were literally writing every day. Like, the script was not done when they were making the film. And so he would finish writing pages in the morning, and then by lunchtime when they would start shooting, he would pass out the pages.
Mm. Yeah, there was one story. I don't know if you came across the one where...
Tell me.
Where he asked her to be sick.
Yeah. I believe it, but it's almost hard to believe, but I do believe it.
Yeah.
Hey, can you just pretend to be sick for a little while?
That was a funny story.
I'm not done writing.
I think I did that in high school.
And I guess they wanted Audrey Hepburn really early on.
Mm.
There was a few other women they looked at, but they settled on her very quickly because they loved her in Roman Holiday.
Okay.
And very brief backstory for Audrey Hepburn real quick. Audrey Hepburn is really interesting because she was an outlier beauty-wise at this time. At this time in the early 50s, it was very popular for women's standards to be more voluptuous and a little, for lack of a better word, fuller.
Plus, and, I think blondes were preferred, too.
Yes, blondes were also very much preferred.
Because I remember...
At least by Hitchcock.
Yeah, no, there was one sub-story I saw regarding... The girl who played the fiance.
Oh yes,
and how
she was not blonde.
No, and apparently when I can't remember who said it, but someone said
Grace
like
Grace Kelly came in or something.
That's right. Yeah, and when she changed her hair or dyed her hair, I guess
she started getting more roles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Audrey Hepburn is brunette, or I think she was a brunette, and she was very lean, very skinny,
very elf-like.
Yes, and that's something that is a way that people actually described her at the time.
Yeah.
And because of the way that she would talk and her manners and etiquette and so on and so forth, they really liked her for movies like Roman Holiday at first because she really felt like a princess.
Mm.
And so they carried on into her other films. But one of the things that people don't understand about Audrey Hepburn is part of the reason why she looks the way she does is because of her upbringing during the Second World War.
Oh, interesting.
Her parents were part of the underground in Europe, and because of the war in general, they were very malnourished.
Mm.
And so when she was growing up, she did not get all the nutrients and everything she should have, and so she just did not grow as the way that she should have.
Hmm.
And so for the rest of her life, she was always more skinny and looked the way she did.
Where'd you hear this at? Just curious.
Biography.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she wanted to be a dancer for a very long time. She wanted to dance ballet.
Mm-hmm.
And she did a little bit. And then she started doing some films in Europe and in England. And then that was how she was discovered for Roman Holiday. So, you know, that's just a little bit tidbit there.
That's cool.
Did you hear about why Humphrey Bogart got the role?
No, I didn't hear anything about, like, how he got the role. But I remember hearing something about a disagreement he had regarding Audrey Hepburn playing the role.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So... Originally, they wanted to cast Cary Grant in the role of Linus.
Oh, that's right. I did see
and
that.
And at the last minute, Cary Grant ended up not taking it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember why. I don't think they gave a real good reason. But at the very last minute, they had to get somebody else. And so they ended up casting Humphrey Bogart.
Okay.
And at this time in his career, he was cast against type. He rarely was cast as the confident, romantic kind of figure.
Mm.
And he was always cast as like a detective or an adventurer or things like that.
Yeah.
And so for him, this was a little rough and a little bit of a challenge, but it was also extra rough because of his age.
Mm-hmm.
He was older than Cary Grant, not by a whole lot more, but by more. And the age difference between him and Audrey Hepburn was, what, 29 years?
Was that how much it was?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And... In the original play, Linus is only in his late 30s, whereas Humphrey Bogart was in his 50s.
Yeah.
And so it's a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so Humphrey Bogart didn't really trust in Audrey Hepburn's acting chops. She'd only done like the one big film before, and I think she just rubbed him the wrong way. Like, they were very different people. He was definitely more gruff and blunt, and what you see is what you get, and she was very polite and bubbly and friendly and childlike, because she was also really young.
Okay. How old was she at this time?
She was in her early 20s, I think. I can't remember.
Okay.
24, maybe. But old enough to be his daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
But what made it worse is that William Holden and her ended up having an affair during the filming.
Yeah, I read that one, too.
And so their chemistry on screen was pretty good for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
But Humphrey Bogart, and I would say their chemistry was not as good.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the gist of it for sure.
So say the part about how Humphrey Bogart wanted his wife to play?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, sure, yeah, originally he had really wanted... Oh, darn it, what's her name?
That they didn't say.
No, I know his wife's name because she was a big-named actress. It doesn't matter. Are you going to look it up?
I'm going to look it up.
Okay. Yeah, I forgot her name. Lauren Bacall.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Anytime I decide not to think about it anymore, I remember. Yeah, Lauren Bacall. They had fallen in love doing some films together, and there is an age difference between the two of them, for sure. And I think back then, an age difference didn't matter as much. I think it was still a little subject for discussion, but it was definitely different. Okay, do you want me to give the plot?
Go for it.
All right. So in the original film version of Sabrina, the main plot surrounds the Larrabee family, which are these amazingly wealthy family in Long Island, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a chauffeur, and the chauffeur's daughter is named Sabrina. And she is in love with the youngest son named David. And when you meet the family, you definitely get to know that David's a big playboy. He's been married several times, and he's been divorced. And he's kind of just living for pleasure, almost. Like, he races his cars all over the place, and he doesn't even know what day it is half the time. And he's always wooing some woman. Whereas Linus, the elder son, is like the one keeping the family business together. He's focused on deals and a little manipulative and what's always going to be best financially for the family sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens in the story is Sabrina watches David woo yet another woman at this big party, and she's about to leave on her trip to go to Paris. And in the film, she's upset because of, I guess, unrequited lover David. And so she tries to kill herself by turning on all of the cars in the garage and inhaling all of the carbon monoxide. At the last minute, she kind of decides she doesn't want to die anymore, and then Humphrey Bogart's character Linus shows up to help her, and she plays it off like it wasn't a suicide attempt, and he takes care of her and takes her upstairs after she passes out and makes sure that she's taken care of. And then it quickly jumps to her in Paris, where she goes to school for cooking. Which was an interesting choice. Yeah. I think it was very 50s.
Yes, it was.
Because in the play, she goes to Paris for very different reasons. And I'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
So she goes to school in Paris for cooking. And she does not do very well, but she's learning. And she meets a guy who's a baron who kind of takes her under his wing and teach her etiquette and to be more fine and, you know, whatever.
Refined,
thank you. And when she comes back home, she finds out that David is now engaged to be married to a woman named Elizabeth. And when she shows up, she comes across David at the train station, and he picks her up, but he doesn't recognize her because she's so fashionable, and she's confident and upbeat. And so he goes to drop her off at home, but he doesn't realize that he's dropping her off at his home.
Mm-hmm.
And so Linus recognizes her, and the rest of the families, the servants, are excited to see her, but then David instantly falls in love with Sabrina, and she's over the moon about it. And so he invites her to the party that night, and she goes, but then what ends up happening is David and Sabrina embarrass the family because David's fiance Elizabeth is there with her family, and so David's literally just like dancing when there's no music with Sabrina, right?
Yeah.
And so the mother, Maud, and the father, Linus Sr., they try to talk to David about it and get him to stop. And David has these champagne glasses in his back pockets. And Linus is aware of this because it's something that David always does with the women at the parties. And so when David refuses to back down on everything with Sabrina, he causes David to sit on the glasses and hurt himself, which then buys Linus time. So then the rest of the film is Linus trying to get Sabrina to fall in love with him and not David, so that Linus can get Sabrina out of the picture, essentially. And the reason they have to do this is because Linus has invested in a new plastic for his company that Elizabeth's family, the Tysons, have. And so if the marriage doesn't go through, then the business merger won't go through.
Oh, they own a sugar.
Yeah, it's like sugar plantations.
And it's made
of plastic. But they own like the recipe for the material or something like that. Yeah. So the rest of the film is him slowly, accidentally falling in love with Sabrina while he's trying to woo her away from David.
Yeah.
And he tells her that he's never been to Paris, and she tells him that he should go. And so then he comes up with this plot that he will go to Paris and take her with him, but at the last moment he will not be on the ocean liner and will force her to leave without him. And then David will get married and she'll be out of the picture.
Correct.
Yeah. But at the last minute, he decides he can't go through with it and he tells her the whole story. And so she's upset, obviously, because she started to fall in love with Linus, but she kind of understands why he did it. And so she decides to leave and go to Paris. And yeah, sorry, I'm trying to boil down the whole story. What ends up happening, though, is David becomes aware that Linus has fallen in love with Sabrina.
Mm-hmm.
Because Linus has told David it's okay to call off the wedding, just go to Paris with Sabrina.
Yeah.
She wants you. So then Linus calls the board of directors meeting to try to call off the merger, but then David shows up and he ends up saying very mean things about Sabrina that causes Linus to punch him, which then proves that Linus is in love with Sabrina.
Yeah.
And so David says that he has vehicles waiting, including a tugboat, that'll get him onto the ocean liner so that he can be with Sabrina. And then David and his father take over the meeting, and he ends up, I guess, marrying Elizabeth in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the gist of the movie.
It was more than a gist.
I know. And you realize that I gave a lot of information there, but I wanted to do that because it's the only way I can really describe the differences between the play and this one and then the remake. But yeah, that's the skeleton of the story. And it definitely felt like a romantic comedy. Like I can definitely see a plot like that happening today. Don't you think?
In real life or in a...
No, in a movie.
Oh, well...
No, I can see a really bad version of it on Hallmark.
I wouldn't be surprised if there isn't already a version.
Right. But what did you think of it?
I liked it. I mean, yeah. It was...
What did you like about it?
Uh-huh. So on this one, I really paid attention to the acting of the character, of the actors and actresses.
Uh-huh.
And kind of the overall comedy, I like... comedy
it's
from
funny,
the 30s and 40s movies and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And so between that and just even kind of watching it, there was something I heard recently regarding leading men in Hollywood from the pre-60s era. And so in watching this movie, I contrasted it to the next movie. And even though it's not as stark as the difference between men back then versus men today or from the 60s on, it was interesting because I could still see what the person was who had described this phenomena. I could see like things like that were different in the movie.
And what do you mean?
So like in this case, the commentator I was listening to was talking about prior to 1960, leading men were stoic. They did not show a lot of stuff on their face. They showed enough for the character, but that was about it. If they did show more, it was usually in comedy, or it was usually in melodrama type thing to express the difference. And they were usually not your traditional, you know, they were either the comic relief or they were there to kind of be a foil for the main character. And what he said is that starting about 1960 movies or so, especially with Lawrence of Arabia, that's when male actors started showing major expression. Like the idea was, you know, he feels it comes because of a lot of the rise of psychodynamism, the rise of feminism. It was kind of showing the internal turmoil that was going on in the male's features. And so even though, because the main character of Linus was supposed to be the stoic person, I found it fascinating to watch the way Humphrey Bogart played it versus the way Harrison Ford played it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And you could see, to some degree, the difference in the way the leading men carried themselves, you know.
I mean, it was different if you would be like Jimmy Stewart playing a comedic character versus Cary Grant. And Cary Grant would do it too in his comedies. But it was interesting. And there was like little things like that, and listening to the music, watching the timing, also trying to figure out, was it shot live and on a set, or was it done outside? I got kind of a thrill just watching, kind of looking at all that stuff and then comparing it to the documentary afterwards.
So a lot of the film was shot in California.
Correct.
So some of the film, when it was at the Larrabee House, was shot at, was it the owner of the company at the time? Mm-hmm. It was like his house in Beverly Hills. And a lot of the other scenes were filmed either like on location somewhere in California, or they were filmed on a studio backlot. So like all the Paris shots, except for a few like stock footage, were filmed in a backlot.
That's what's funny, is like you never see Paris. Oh, you see it outside the window of the school or outside of her apartment. Oh, they also did shoot at the tennis court.
The indoor tennis court?
Was one of those was from the head of CBS.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like they kind of just pieced together everything they could get.
Mm-hmm.
What I thought was interesting about the 50s version is one of the things that has come to define this film is the fashion. To this day, one of the things that you will hear people who love this movie, they will talk about the fashion. Like all the dresses that Audrey Hepburn wore and everything. They were definitely an icon for the time.
Yeah.
And I think in remaking the film, I think that's one of the things that they had to take into consideration. But, I mean, the dresses she wears are definitely outstanding and gorgeous. It's funny because growing up, I really enjoyed this film.
Mm-hmm.
I watched this one more often. I mean, I've only seen it maybe a few times growing up, but I think after I graduated high school, I was in my 20s, I started watching the remake. And then I remember loving the remake.
Mm.
And so it caused me to think, what is it about the original that I really enjoy? And what is it about the remake that I prefer? And so one of the things I thought was intriguing about the original is how popular it was when it first came out. Like it did amazingly well in the box office and with critics and audiences, and for a very long time it's been a staple.
Yeah.
But I wonder how much of that now is based off of nostalgia for the time period and the fashion.
I mean, I think some of it might just be the actress, too.
Well, yes, I think the reputation of Audrey Hepburn.
Yeah. I mean, it also, so in watching it with my wife, because she's an Audrey Hepburn fan. And
she enjoyed it, I'm sure.
She did. And she actually prefers the older version to the newer version.
I find that most people prefer the original to the remake. There are some very polite vocal people who prefer the remake.
Okay.
But I'm always interested in what is it about the versions that people prefer.
So I know she mentioned, and I could see why, was the way Sabrina was portrayed by the two different actresses.
Yeah, because they are portrayed differently.
Yes. And so she preferred the Audrey Hepburn's version, where she comes across a lot more childlike.
Oh, she comes off very childlike.
Yes. And she kind of play, and even though she goes to Paris and comes back, she in some way she comes back still a sophisticated teenager in a way.
Right.
And I think, I don't know why,
it just seems like she's having fun the whole time.
Yeah. But that was kind of how she handled the character. Plus, I can think of a couple other characters from the 60s that portrayed themselves. I'm thinking of like two different British shows I watched. And they always had that, we are women who are growing up but still have childlike qualities about
us. Like a childlike wonder.
Yeah. And I found that the audience is like that in the shows with that character. So I don't know if that where she got that from, or it is a little bit different from some of the other movies she did later on.
Right.
I never saw I haven't seen Roman Holiday, so I don't know. Like, is she just portraying herself? Or is she actually, is there a little more acting?
She's definitely more childlike in this one.
Okay.
In the other one, she's more regal, I would say.
Because
she's playing a princess.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes. In Roman Holiday, she plays a princess who basically takes a day off and goes, like, in disguise out into Italy and cuts her hair and just tries to have a normal life for a day, basically.
Yeah. Okay.
But, yeah. One of the things that about this film that I found interesting this time around is once I found out that they were writing the movie as they went, it made a lot of sense to me.
Okay.
Because there's some things about the film that I think the script could have been a bit tighter on and more connected on.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that bothered me this time around is when she goes to commit suicide in the garage, she leaves a suicide note for her father.
Mm-hmm.
And then we never hear about that note ever again.
Yeah.
And she put it under the door where she couldn't get it. So I was trying to figure out, well, he read it, right? Anyway, it was things like that. That's just one example, but like, I enjoy the movie, don't get me wrong. Like, I would watch it again. I've seen it several times before, but it definitely opened my eyes to how it kind of feels like it was cut and pasted together, in my opinion. One of the things that I thought was a little weird this time around is how easily Audrey Hepburn's character of Sabrina is just swayed to do things. You know what I'm talking about?
Explain.
She seems very impressionable.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, starting obviously with when she's in Paris, when the Baron shows an interest in her and, like, takes her under his wing kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, she just kind of listens to him. Like, she just does what he tells her. Like, he tells her to cut her hair and she cuts her hair, you know, stuff mm-hmm. like that. But when she comes home, she definitely is more self-assured and confident. But, like, when Linus tries to distract her away from David, even though she clearly wants to be with David, he's, like, taking her out on the boat ride. He's taking her off to go dancing. He's doing all these things. And the whole time I'm watching this, I'm like, why isn't she trying to spend time with David? Like, she wants to be with David. Like, David's at the house. Like, she could go spend time with David. Like the whole thing with, like, her meeting Linus in the indoor tennis court and then he kisses her. I was like, why are you kissing him? Like, it just felt like Linus especially was dragging her around and she just kind of went with it.
But I think at the same time, my view of that was because she went out to Paris and she had new experiences, she came back and being an impressionable young woman was willing to just go where the experiences took her.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that. I think it also portrays how the love she had for David was very much a...
kind of shallow.
A shallow love, yeah. And the only reason I think for me that it didn't seem odd is because I have met a handful of women who are like that.
Sure.
Where...
And I mean, I believe it happens. One of the things I looked at it, though, was also... I kind of viewed it through the lens of early 50s Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the way that Hollywood in the time would show the differences in the genders.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought maybe it's partly that, because there was definitely a lot of things in older films where it was like the men kind of just did things and the women just kind of took it, for yeah. lack of a better way of saying
yeah.
it. Like, oh, the guy's kissing me now, but I'm not going to pull away from him necessarily because that would be rude, you know?
Yes, and I think that is demonstrated later.
Sure.
In the other movie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think some of it is you're watching it in a different culture and time.
Correct.
and stuff. But yeah, you want to know one thing about this film that I actually really... Well, there's a few things about this film I really like. Obviously, some of her dresses are just gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few times where the movie's very funny. And one of the funny parts in it that I like is when William Holden's character of David comes in. He's upset with Linus
mm-hmm.
when he finds out about the merger deal with the marriage and everything.
Yeah.
And in the beginning. And then he goes in and then Linus brings in the big plastic glass thing. And he has all of the secretaries and
on top of it.
And David on it bouncing. Yes. He's like, bounce, bounce. And they're just like jostling each other on top. And all the secretaries are just like, okay.
I like the same moments when they did that at the party.
Yes,
when
yes.
she comes back.
Yeah, there's like three different ways that they do it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The other part in the film that I really like that you can't really do today that I thought was romantic and visually interesting is at the very, near the very end when they're in the office and Linus, you can tell Linus is starting to second guess his plan about sending Sabrina off to Paris without him. He has a view of the New York harbors. And so he can see all the ocean liners from his window.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's this kind of impression you get of it being imminent and that he's running out of time because you can see where, like, the ocean liners she'll be on.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he calls the meeting into order and he told David to leave with Sabrina on the ocean liner, in the distance, you can see the ocean liner out the window leaving.
Yeah.
And I really liked that. I just think it was, it's romantic, it's visually intriguing, it shows that he's waiting until the ocean liner gets to a point where it can't really be stopped before he gives his information.
Mm-hmm.
And you, of course, you can't really replicate that now because everybody just flies. And
yeah.
There is definitely something about older movies and seeing things that have changed, and there's a romanticism to it. Whether or not it's as hyped up as it should be, I think there's definitely romanticism to a lot of what we find in the past in movies and things like that.
No,
so,
I agree.
So that's fun.
Yeah. And it was funny, too, because it continues on. So even it continued on to the next movie to see the change in times from then to now.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I was thinking about some of that, too, when he's, like, getting on the tugboat and they're going after, and I'm thinking, wow, can you imagine that was still a point when you took an ocean liner to cross to Europe?
I know. Yeah, it'd be about a week on the ocean, yeah.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool, but...
I mean, you can still. You can take the Queen Mary, too. That's
true.
It's still an ocean liner.
Yeah, no, I know you can, but, I mean, it's not the same.
I want to. That way I don't have to worry about time zones and the... And I can
true.
I can get ready for the sleeping. I don't need to worry about jet lag, you know. I just like slowly transition into my sleep patterns. Yeah.
But no, overall I thought it was interesting to watch it and to see some of the new things. And one of the things, speaking of that, which I thought was funny, was how when the father would make comments about the help should not have, you know, relationships with the
Linus Sr.
Yeah. And then how all the characters were like, this is a new world, it's a new
age.
It's
the 20th century.
It's the 20th century, yeah.
And they're not wrong. Like, for the time, like, there was a lot of change that had happened at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Not, I mean, obviously, a lot more change happened, but...
But for them, there was already a new age.
There was definitely some dialogue that was very interesting, and you wouldn't necessarily expect it for the film. There was some dialogue in there that I really liked, especially from Sabrina's father, the chauffeur. He has dialogue with Humphrey Bogart's character, Linus, where he's driving. And I thought the father was a little bit of a pushover in this film.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of just there and just, like, watching everything happening to his daughter and, like, doesn't do anything about it the whole time.
Because
he knows what's happening, he just doesn't do anything about it. And I was like, okay, just watching her get worked over by these guys, that's fine, you know. But at one point in the movie, he talks to Linus and he says, everybody talks about this being very democratic, that someone like the Larrabees would marry a chauffeur's daughter. He says, everybody loves how democratic it is for the Larrabees, but they don't call it democratic when it's the chauffeur's daughter marrying the Larrabees. And so that was very intriguing, because I think even today, that is a sentiment that we would hear. This idea of, oh, it's very modern it's like a Cinderella story for someone to marry down, but then all the negative things you hear about someone marrying up. Right. So like, in a lot of society, like you might hear somebody get praised for marrying somebody who's like really below their level.
So you're talking about where
finance or if like it's like a prince marrying a commoner or whatever.
Yeah.
But then you don't hear the praise on the flip side where it's the commoner marrying the prince or the poor person marrying the rich person. Like,
are you talking about real life or are you talking about art?
Real life.
I don't know that many people who've married.
Well, but that's something that I thought was intriguing about the film is because they make that comment.
Yeah, there's only once. I've only met one person in the last maybe 20 years where she married into a wealthier family. And I remember, like, her and I had become friends. We were classmates. And I remember her kind of complaining a little bit about her in-laws. She tried not to. She tried her best. But she knew they didn't care for her, you know. And then to top it off, she was half Japanese.
The audacity.
I know, but they and she understood, you know, and she understood too that she was coming from a middle class family and marrying into a, I don't know how wealthy they were, but they were definitely higher than her family.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I don't think I've never really paid attention.
All right, so I'm gonna jump in real quick, and I'm gonna talk about the play a little bit. So we can talk about some of the differences. We're not focusing on the play, but I found it interesting the differences that were made. And you will find that the remake actually goes back a little bit to the play in ways that the first film did not.
Okay.
In the play, Sabrina Fair, there's a lot of small things. Like the opening dialogue is basically the same. there's something at the very end of the opening dialogue they omit for the original film, but then they restore it in the remake, but at the very end of the film. And in the play, it opens on the day Sabrina comes back from Paris, and she's been gone, I think, in the play for 5 years. And she's been gone working in Paris, and she kind of worked her way up working jobs for the U.S. government. And she was like a secretary, and she ended up becoming something more, and it had something to do with like NATO or something like that. So it's very political in some ways. But the Larrabee family is at their home in Long Island, and they actually have a guest staying with them who's recuperating from a surgery, who's like a friend of the mom's. And so she ends up being like the outsider voice, who's kind of like a voice of reason and stuff, who gets the characters to think differently about things. And so in this one, the characters are younger. The original, the Linus is in his later 30s, and David, I think, is in either his early 30s or late 20s, I don't remember. And the play is definitely much more comical. And it is romantic, but it's definitely more comical. Like, there's funny things, like, in the play, the father is really interested in funerals.
That's funny.
Like, it's one of those things where it's like, he needs to have a hobby, so he goes to as many funerals as he can.
Yeah.
And so it's stuff like that. And the subject of parties is not a big deal in the play. The family in the play has a lot of money, but they're not shown as wealthy as they are in the films. And in the play, Sabrina had a crush on David when she was younger, but it's not a huge deal for her. And so when she ends up going to Paris to work, she kind of goes so that she can become her own person and like she doesn't have to depend on another man kind of thing. Like, she's very much a modern woman in the play. And like she wants to take care of herself. Like, she's still respectful and loving of her father and everything, but she definitely wants to take care of herself and be her own person. And so when she comes back, she's very informed and confident, and I would say in some ways very outspoken when you read it. Like, she definitely says things that are almost rude at times to some of the other characters, because she just says things that she wants to. And Linus ends up taking it upon himself to try to get Sabrina to get back with David. Like, it's almost like a test, just to see if he can do it. But what ends up happening is Sabrina left Paris because there is a Frenchman who is trying to marry her. And so he ends up showing up in Long Island trying to find her, essentially. And so it's kind of this thing where she's trying to get away from the Frenchman, but also kind of getting with David, but not really. And then in the very end, it ends up working out that the deal that Linus was trying to get, he was able to get only because the Frenchman was there and he met him. And so it worked out in his favor, mainly because he was there looking for Sabrina. And so there's this whole bit where he says, "Everything worked out for me because of you, Sabrina." And at the very end of the play, Sabrina and Linus get together, more because he's more like her intellectual equal and that sort of thing. And they slowly built a relationship up through the play, but it's definitely very different.
So outlining all that, and I don't know much about Samuel Taylor, but I can see how in simplifying the character of Sabrina, he may have got that may have been.
And definitely making her more domestic.
Yes, because one of the things that my wife pointed out in the difference between the two is she liked that Audrey Hepburn's portrayal was more feminine. But I think she also liked it. I'm kind of speculating. I think she also liked that she was innocent feminine.
Sure.
Whereas based on what you were just reading or talking about right now, it sounds like he was portraying a
very woman of the
modern
world.
Modern woman.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think in the play, it was very much almost like shocking for the time.
Yeah.
Like how much she was not traditional feminine in the play.
And the play was about the 50s too?
The play came out in 53.
53. Okay.
Right. But there was a lot of things at this time that plays could do that films couldn't really do. And the film could have gone more the direction of the play. They just chose not to.
I wonder if part of it, too, was that think about who went to see plays.
Sure.
It was the upper level, higher kind of usually, I don't know at this point, but they're a little more.
It's always a very different crowd who goes to see live theater
correct.
Than those who go to see the movies. I would say the movies are definitely for the masses.
Yes, yes.
And for better or worse, live theater is definitely for a very specific audience that I would say sometimes, in the best of cases, are just very intellectual and very open to these things, and worst case scenario are pretentious. Just very pretentious. And yeah,
and so I can see why he would
drop out of working on it.
Yeah, and I think he had more to say. He had it was more message driven.
Yeah, you could definitely see one of the biggest differences is how they sent her to school in Paris to learn to cook.
Yeah, especially considering in the play, she was the Assistant Economic Commissioner, Office of Special Representative for Europe Economic Cooperation Administration.
Yep.
She was the private secretary.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's a big difference.
It's funny because as you were reading it, I was kind of reading a little bit about the play too, and I see some of the differences.
Yeah. So that whole thing about, you know, David getting married several times, that was added in for the film because David in the original play was only married once.
Okay.
And was divorced. And the whole thing about David getting remarried and it becoming this whole part of the plot where it was a merger that was connected to the wedding that, like, basically the main plot of the movie is not in the play. I'll just say that. Like, the main issues that the characters face in the film were created just for the film.
So it says in the film how her, about her dad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pointed out to me that whenever the father, the Laramie father, whenever Linus was buying and selling in his car.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're talking about the play, right?
No, the 54 movie.
Okay.
The father would either smile or nod, but he never said anything. And that part of the difference between the play and the movie was never brought out. But I kind of wondered if that was a subtle nod.
Yeah, because in the play, you find out that the father had been investing where the Larrabee father had been investing. And so anytime the Larrabee father made money, then the chauffeur would make money, Mr.
Correct.
Fairchild. Yeah. And so he ends up being very wealthy, but he loves working for the Larrabees and he loves his job because he loves to read. Mm-hmm. And he took the job because he loves to read and it gave him time to read every time he was parked somewhere. And so that's something the original movie doesn't really go into. The movie doesn't really talk about that. But they do talk about it in the remake.
They do. But that's why I was curious as to whether it was a subtle nod whenever the dad would make a mm-hmm. facial smile or something. He did something every time he heard
it's funny because in the play, Mr. Fairchild wants to give his daughter Sabrina the money
mm-hmm.
so that she can do with it what she wants to and, like, live on her own and sort of thing. Like, he gives her the means to be her own person, essentially, not dependent on anyone. And so because of that, it actually gives her a lot more agency to make her own choices in the end, to do what she wants. Like, she can marry one of the Larrabees, or she doesn't have to. She can go back to Paris. She can do whatever she wants.
Mm-hmm.
But it puts her on equal playing field with the Larrabees. And it's interesting that the original film doesn't choose to discuss that because he never brings it up. He never says that he has the money, and he never gives it to Sabrina. And so it's interesting that they chose not to show that mm-hmm. in the original film.
Yeah.
And the only reason why I could think of is it was more romantic that Linus went after the penniless chauffeur's daughter.
Yeah, I think so too. I think with the 50s version of the adaptation was a lot more. That's what they were aiming for. I mean, that was kind of the movies of the time. Mm-hmm. That's
a little simple.
It was, and that's what I think the audiences especially were expecting at the time.
I came across a YouTuber, and I can't remember the name of it now, but the title was something like The Director Knew What He Was Doing or something like that.
Uh-huh.
He had some very strong words to say. I'll just mention that. He did not like the remake at all. He was vocal about how he did not like the remake, and I think he was a little immature about it, but he did have some good things to say that I thought had their own merit in regards to the original. It seems like Billy Wilder really knew how to frame a scene. Like, he definitely knew how to create really beautiful shots.
Yeah.
And he knew how to use what was going on in the scene to help tell the story. And the one example that I can think of that he mentions in the video is when they're in the indoor tennis courts in the beginning when David is flirting with the giggly girl.
Yeah.
She tells him that he has to stay on his side of the court and she has to stay on her side of the court.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're kind of playing with each other, talking and flirting as Sabrina's looking on, right?
Yeah.
And then at one point, David goes over and surreptitiously causes the net to fall. And so he's able to go to her side. And whether or not this is true, you could take it this way. The YouTuber was saying that it was interesting because for the time, it's like a visual metaphor for what was expected between the sexes. It was like you have this game where you're on your side and she's on her side, and you flirt with each other and you don't really cross that line, but then it shows that David is willing to do what he has to cross that line. So I don't know if that was what it was intended, but yeah. It was definitely a very specific choice by the filmmakers. So there was things like that where the original 50s is shot very well at times, and so like it definitely has its merits.
Yeah, yeah. And then what did you think, before we move on or finish, wrap up, anything about the parents, the dad?
The parents kind of just fall to the background a lot.
They're comedic relief in many ways.
They very much are comedic relief. I think they're there to help showcase the main characters.
Yeah.
Definitely Maude is the most simple because she's just kind of there to highlight what's going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I like her because she's very polite. She's very friendly. Like she doesn't blame Sabrina necessarily for David's behavior with her because she just knows David by now.
Yeah.
She's very much like, oh, hello, Sabrina. Welcome back. You know, you look different. You know, it's good to see you, whatever. Because she very much could have been like, okay, bye, Sabrina. Get out of here. But
you belong downstairs.
Right. Yeah.
This is upstairs.
Yeah. But like she basically fades away very quickly.
Yeah.
And then Linus Sr., the impression I got with him in the original film is he kind of just stopped focusing on work, and work was a joke to him because he didn't need to worry about it because Linus Jr. always
took care of everything. Yeah.
Which is funny because we'll talk about this later, but that's kind of what ends up happening with David in the remake.
Mm-hmm.
It's just more clear in the remake.
It was.
Yeah, because as soon as Linus leaves to go after Sabrina, Linus Sr., the father, ends up taking up the reins again. He's very confident, and he knows what he's talking about, and not being dumb, you know?
Yeah. No, I like the character of the father, but there were times when I felt the comedy went a little too much.
Oh, yeah. Like, he definitely kind of stuck out a little bit like a sore thumb at times. One thing I thought interesting this time is there's the scene where he's struggling to get the olive out of the glass jar.
Yes.
And then he just pours his it's a gin.
It was a martini.
He pours the martini into the olive container just so he can have it with that.
That was
but
fun.
Then he's still struggling to get the olive out when he's done, and they're having this whole conversation with father to son about what are you going to do to solve the problem, and like how far will you go, and this sort of thing. And then the Linus Jr. gets frustrated with his father, and he ends up breaking the jar, and he puts the olive into his father's mouth. And to me, I kind of took that as a visual symbolism for what he's going to do to get things done. Like,
correct.
He's willing to just...
If I have to break jars,
if I have to break hearts, you know, whatever, like, I'm going to get this done.
I have a thing against broken glass. I get paranoid because I've had glass stuck in me as a kid. So in watching that scene when he broke the glass jar and then he took the olive and threw it in the father's mouth, I'm thinking to myself, like,
there's glass.
Was there glass in that olive? Is he going to choke? And
yes. The next scene's a funeral.
Oh, well. Did the actor have to go to the ER after that? But that kind of threw me off.
Yeah. You know who I felt really bad for in the original movie?
Who's that?
Elizabeth, the fiance. I felt so bad for her because she was so sweet. I mean, definitely a rich girl,
but
she was so sweet. And yet, like, David's literally ignoring her at this party and, like, doing things to, like, he, like, has it so that someone spills their drink on her dress so that she goes away. And he dances with Sabrina and, like, very romantically, and is literally, like, hitting on Sabrina.
Yeah.
Trying to, like, get with Sabrina. And this whole time, Elizabeth's just like, where's David? And and I'm just like, girl, like... And of course, like, at first, Linus is trying to cover for his brother, and I think kind of give him some time to come to his senses, but also like stop problems from happening.
Yeah.
And so he dances with Elizabeth at first, trying to distract her and whatever. But this whole time, David's just literally like almost having an affair with Sabrina this whole time.
Mm-hmm. That was definitely an emotional one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But you get the impression that he would have taken it further.
Oh, yeah.
And... The one thing about the original that I really don't like, I don't even think it's from a modern point of view, is how much Sabrina does not care that David is engaged.
Hmm.
She comes back home and immediately is excited to see David and kind of flirts with him and immediately accepts going to the party with him and just wants to be with him and like kisses him and everything. But she knows he's engaged.
Yeah.
And there's literally a line where I think her father tells her, well, he's engaged. You know that he's engaged. And she says, well, he's not married yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, Sabrina, you're playing with fire. So I think that's part of the reason why in the end she's okay with leaving.
Yeah.
Because I think in a way she also kind of comes to her senses that she is also kind of the other woman.
Yeah. And does she want to be that, basically?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Like,
I think
if the family's gone this far to stop it.
Yes, yeah, and I think she's part of it's kind of the maturity process too that goes on throughout her journey in the movie. It's
exactly.
Very subtle, I think, yeah. In this one.
She's still trying to come into her own. The way I kind of view it is, she was one person at the beginning of the film, and then she like tries to become the opposite, but she needs to find the middle.
Correct. Yeah, which is the maturity that she ends up more or less with at the end.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah.
Hopefully.
I do like the little bit at the end, because at one point she's talking to Linus about when if and when he goes to Paris, he can't wear his Hamburg hat the way he does. And she fixes it and she like pulls it down in the front.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very end, when she thinks she's alone going to Paris on the ocean liner, the porter comes out and he tells her a gentleman asked if she would fix his hat for him. And so she fixes it, but then she goes up looking because she's like, is it Linus? And then yeah. Linus shows up. And
I wondered if that's what... I assumed that's what he asked her because it was in French.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, cool. You speak French?
Un peu.
Really?
Oui.
Oh, wow.
I understood a little bit of what he said. I didn't get the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that I knew for sure is that he said hat because he said chapeau.
We're going to do a podcast on different languages one day. I'll do all in German, the 10 words I know.
So no Spanish for you?
Spanish. Why would I speak Spanish?
Because you're from the hood.
I'm from the non-Spanish speaking side.
Yeah, what do you say? No, you say the ghetto. You say you're from the ghetto.
From the ghetto.
Yes.
Not the hood.
Yes.
That's a different place.
Yeah. You're from a neighborhood.
I
That's
am.
Where that comes from.
No, I know. I do know more Spanish than I know German, but I've been slowly trying to teach myself.
Me habla poquito español para el trabajo.
Sí.
I learned enough to get by at work.
That's a good thing to do. They appreciate it. No, I did like the ending. I thought it was a traditional 40s, 50s.
Oh, yeah. It's very much like you get what you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I thought was funny is they don't kiss in the end.
Yeah, I found that interesting, too.
Yeah,
they just
because they could have. They didn't.
I wondered if that had been that when I saw that.
Just imagine Humphrey Bogart going, I'm not kissing her.
Yeah, that's kind of what I kind of wondered. Because
she kisses
happened.
David earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not kissing that woman. She kissed him.
That's funny.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good film. Like, it's fun.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. We don't usually do this now, but we can do it now unless you want to wait. Do you want to talk about favorite characters and ratings now?
Yeah.
We'll talk about it. We can talk about... If you want, we can even do the adaptation for this one and then just move on and talk about the remake for the next one.
Sure.
All right. So, who was your favorite character in this one?
My favorite character...
Father.
No, in this one...
The Baron. Who has like a minute of screen time.
I know.
He was a little creepy. I'll just say that.
He was. At first I thought he was hitting on her.
I thought he was too. Maybe he was. We don't know what happened.
That is true.
They didn't show anything. How did she get all those dresses?
So it would either have to be Sabrina, Audrey Hepburn, or Humphrey Bogart.
I figured you would say the bogey.
Yeah, I'm going to lean towards Humphrey Bogart as my favorite.
Okay.
Even though yes, he probably could have been more expressive and there was some... I won't say this was his best role ever. It was definitely...
What would you say is his best role? Rick from Casablanca?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All the gin joints in the world, she had to walk into mine.
Yes. I did enjoy watching him in this one. Even if it was to see him struggle a little at times. And I would have to lean more towards him versus Audrey Hepburn just because there were a little things here and there with her character that kind of
irked me
a bit. Yeah. But then I think there's little things she does in all her movies that irk me a bit. But I do like her, and I think
there's an endearing quality to her.
There is, yes.
Yeah. There's just something about her that draws you in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if you don't like everything about her, you just can't stop looking at her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I would just pick Audrey Hepburn, because for that reason alone.
Okay.
It's so funny, though, because it really just felt like... It almost felt like she was pigeonholed into this movie.
Mm.
Because it just felt like she was doing her own thing the whole time. Like, no matter what energy she was given from someone, she was just doing her own thing.
Maybe.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, no, it does. I that's why I kind of wondered whether or not this is...
It's like she was just living in a dream the whole time.
I mean, don't they say a line along that, or was that in the remake?
It was the remake.
Okay. I mean, that's where they could have gotten that line from.
Maybe.
Because she was in a way living in a dream.
Yes, we have no bananas. Mm-hmm. Have you heard that song before?
Probably. It sounded really familiar. Yeah, I figured it was. Probably from the 20s. Turn of the last century.
Well, that's
yeah.
the joke, because they lean into the fact that he's so much older than her in the movie. Mm-hmm. And so he takes all his records out, but they're all his old college records. And so they're playing an old 20s song, but it's 54. And so she's like, I've never heard this song before. Is it new? Yeah. And he's like, well, you've been out of the country a while.
And then when he puts his Yale hat on.
I know. Like, doesn't even, the whole outfit doesn't even fit him anymore.
Nope.
The father just smoking in his closet.
I thought it was your mother.
Yeah, I think Audrey Hepburn might be my favorite just for the qualities she possesses and the grace and the beauty and everything.
Okay, cool.
What would you rate this film as from a scale of 1 to 10? 1 being I wish I never saw this, and 10 being this is the best.
I probably would give it... I'm going to go back to my 7.5s.
Oh, okay. You see, I'm going low for this one, actually.
I kind of figured you would.
I think I might give it a 6.
A 6, yeah. Okay.
I think I have a solid 6. It's on the high end. I would watch it again, but there's enough about it that I'm not a big fan about. Like, I would watch it, and I enjoy it, and there's things I like about it, but, again, I don't... Like, comparatively, you know?
Okay, yeah.
All right, well, unless you got anything else you want to talk about, we can wrap this one up.
Nope.
And then, okay. Sounds good. Well, thanks for listening out there. Stick around. There's going to be a lot more to talk about for the remake. And for those of you who do love the Audrey Hepburn version of the film, why don't you reach out to us? Let us know why you enjoy it or why you hate it. I don't know. And give us some info that we can talk about for another time. You know, we'd love to hear from you guys.
Yes.
So we'll catch you on the second part of Sabrina, where we talk about the 95 remake.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Take care.
Bye.
Next time on Willing to Adapt, this version, the 1995 remake of Sabrina.
It definitely is a movie of its time.
So it didn't do very well, but later on, both Harrison Ford and Sidney Pollack went on to defend the film, saying that it was one of their favorites. I prefer this film to the original.
Yeah, I figured. It was very Shakespearean and teenage-ish.
It was very Shakespearean.
And very...
That's a compliment.
Is an adaptation always a remake?
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Willing to Adapt.
Please follow or subscribe. Maybe leave a review, or just share us with friends and family.
We would also like it if you would follow us on social media.
If you have ideas for future episodes for us, please email us at ericandromy@willingtoadapt.com.
That's Romy with an I.
And remember, when the only thing constant in life is change, be willing to adapt.